Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and AM 1240 WGBB.com. Time for a segment that I like to call Dave's Got Guests. And ordinarily, if you were looking in the studio right now, you'd say, well, no, it's just singular, just one guest. But this particular time, there are really two people here in spirit. One of them is my very good friend and old friend from more than two decades ago. We've known each other since junior high school, and we're very close friends, and he's been on the radio program a couple of times. Hope to have him on a bunch of times more, because he always has amazing, funny, and interesting, nutty, true stories to tell about his life and our lives in Long Island and elsewhere. But today is going to be a bit more serious, unfortunately, because the person who's with us in spirit is a fella that my friend Scott Rogalitz knew pretty well in his visits to Russia. And, well, let me read a little piece from The Guardian here of what happened last week. A human rights scholar who devoted himself to eliminating racism has been shot dead in St. Petersburg, assumedly by a neo-Nazi group. Nikolai Gurenko, who was 64 years old and a specialist in ethnology and conflict, was shot at point-blank range when his granddaughter called him to speak to a stranger at the door. I mean, we'll get some, whatever more details we actually know about this, but Scott knew this man, Nikolai Gurenko. I met him once or twice on my trip to Russia. But my memories are very general and vague. I think Scott has a lot more to contribute, and also about the whole situation and what led up to this and what's going on with all of it. So, Scott Rogalitz, welcome to Dave's Gone By. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Well, how am I doing? It's a very sad occasion to be here to discuss something like this. In the past, you know, we've done interviews about funny things,
right,
and happier things. This is a real, absolute tragedy. The Russian Federation has lost one of the greatest scholars. I've lost a dear friend, and in fact, my doctoral dissertation advisor, my PhD
right.
advisor.
Okay.
Nikolai Gurenko was a great man. I met him first in probably early 1992. He had come to the United States, and he was visiting some museums, and a curator of one of these museums, I think it was of Indianapolis, introduced me to him when they were in New York. And we hit it off. We became friendly. He was extremely congenial, Nikolai. Nikolai was just the kind of guy with a twinkle in his eye and this just wonderful inquisitiveness about him, and immediately just began to talk and just His English was very beautiful. He spoke excellent English, and so we had no problem communicating at all. And he invited me. I assumed on a lark, basically,
right.
You know, if you're ever in St. Petersburg, look me up, you know, because at the time, I believe he was still executive director of the Museum of Anthropology and Ethnography in St.
Okay.
Petersburg. He had come to look at objects. At the time, I was director of a gallery in downtown in Soho.
He had actually come to the New York gallery.
Yeah, he had visited the gallery, and we spoke when I was the director there, and I was getting out of that business and back into academia. And I mentioned that I was, you know, interested particularly in African art, and he said, well, you know, our museum has a collection of thousands of pieces of African material that were accessioned, most of them, before the Russian Revolution. That's a remarkable thing.
Right.
It was the most of the material is virtually undocumented. It's come out in a few books that highlighted it.
Right.
There's an enormous amount of material in that museum. It's really a wonderful place. But anyway, and he said, if you're ever in St. Petersburg, come to the museum, give us a call, we'll take you around. Well,
right.
I got there, and I don't even think I called ahead of time. I think I just got there. I called the museum. I asked for Nikolai Gurenko. He got on the phone. I told him I'm in town, and he said, well, you must come to the museum immediately. So I got in a taxi, and I went to the Naberezhnaya, to the embankment, right on the Neva River, just across the river, catty corner to the Hermitage.
Okay.
Is this magnificent, I mean, the whole city is gorgeous, but you have the Hermitage on one side, and then on the other side of the river, the Palace Bridge, you have this beautiful blue building with a spire coming up in the sun. This was the first museum. Peter the Great built this museum himself.
Wow.
This is the Museum of Anthropology and Ethnography. And Nikolai Gidenko met me, brought me in, introduced me immediately to a young fellow who was Sergei Polyakov, you remember Seroja?
Is that old Serge?
No, young Serge.
Young Serge, okay. Cool.
Papa Serge is the older Serge. He's in the publishing business.
Got it.
And they took me into the archives, the reserves of the museum, and let me see the archives of the museum. And I mean, it was a welcome that was unbelievable. And then I met Konstantin Pozniakov, who was a great man, wonderful man. And Girenko and Sevier Chernitsov, who informed me, I'll get to that in a little while. He's the one who emailed me about Nikolai's death. Sasha Azarov and Yevgeny Kolchakov, the whole group that was in office number 22, although Sevier was across the hall, but room 22 had been the office that Dmitry Oldorogi, who was the original, he was the guy who sort of really brought African studies to another level at the museum there throughout the 60s. And I believe Gidenko studied under him at one point. There was a picture that Gidenko showed me once of himself as a very young man with Oldorogi upstairs during one of the conferences. Every year they have a Dmitry Oldorogi conference there. So.
Oh, cool.
And
Over the months then, you went back to Russia and met him. Yeah.
Nikolai specifically, and Konstantin, I should say also, invited me back. At the time, I should mention, Nikolai, by the time I got there, was not director of the museum. He was a senior, he was a researcher, and he was teaching at the State University. And he might have been, he was in a position in the museum, but I'm not sure exactly what position he was in at that time. This is 92, so I don't
know. Okay.
There was a different director at that point, Dr. Alexander Milnikov. So, but I was invited back, yes. And they said, why don't you come back when the weather's a little nicer? Right. And you can go through.
Yeah, you were there for about a month, going through 6 weeks.
6 weeks the next time, studying and basically working in the archives, photographing things for my own research. And
basically, all on the impetus of
because
Nikolai
of Nikolai Gidenko,
right.
Primarily because of Nikolai Gidenko inviting me to begin with, and then making me comfortable. I was there and helping me tremendously. And then, my main memories of Nikolai and that through all the times is that Nikolai would stroke he had a short beard with a lot of blonde gold still in it.
I mean, apparently he used to look like Peter O'Toole a bit.
Yeah, when he was young, there's a picture that I found of him without a mustache and beard even that he gave me of when he was a very young man, and he looks like a young Peter O'Toole.
Cool.
And then, in fact, I just got an email from Alexander Azarov. Sasha Azarov.
Right.
Who sent me an email with a picture of Nikolai Gidenko when he must have first grown a beard, darker, you know, his hair was... But in any case, Gidenko...
he would stroke his beard.
When he would talk, and he would always keep his bielomor. The Russian cigarettes are called papiros.
Right.
Papiros, and it's a paper tube with tobacco at the end, rather than it being a filter. It's not a filter, it's basically a way to hold the cigarette, and Gidenko would pinch it down and hold it inside his mouth, kind of chewing it. And he would stroke his beard and kind of contemplate, you know, kind of just sit there thinking about things and make a statement about, yes, But he was extremely polite. And most importantly, he knew his subject very well. The man was an incredible socioanthropologist. We would have discussions about socioanthropology, and what he could say in a few lines, people like Marvin Harris have written books on. And Gidenko could crystallize it into... two paragraphs that, you know, I would just say to myself while I'm listening to him, if I only had a note, you know, a pad here to write down these two paragraphs that he just said, this man has put into a few words, into the most concise way, this fantastic understanding of sociological structures, socio-anthropological structures. He was just a genius in this.
So, who were the enemies?
That's a whole nother issue. You have to understand, I knew Nikolai Gidenko as an ethnographer, and when the time came, it was I basically decided that I would like to defend a doctoral dissertation in Russia with the Russian Academy of Sciences. I should note I still haven't done it, but Nikolai Gidenko was to be my advisor.
Right.
And I dropped the ball. I really should have done a huge amount of work years ago, and I should have defended this and had it years ago, but I dropped the ball.
Because it was the equivalent of sort of a Rhodes scholarship over there.
But Gidenko was very supportive of me in that, and was willing to go to bat for me, as were the rest of the guys. I don't want to just put it only on him,
okay.
But, you know, to help me get to do that as well.
Right. When was your last talk to him?
Actually, I got an email from him less than a month ago, because I had written another article, and I had asked, I had sent him an email asking him, would you like to read an article I've recently written on something in African art history? And he wrote back frighteningly chilling words that, as long as I'm alive, you know I will always read everything you write.
Ah.
But I knew Nikolai Gidenko as an ethnographer.
Okay, yeah,
I did
right.
not know him as a human rights activist, although I knew he did this. Nikolai's passion, in some ways, it was more of a... I wouldn't even almost call it a passion. I would say it was to him as natural as breathing. He felt it had to be done. He was a fighter in support of the rights of minorities in the Russian Federation. And a lot of people from other republics live in Russia and are discriminated against. Not to mention, Kyrgyzians. There was a case that Gidenko was involved in of a Kyrgyzian girl that was stabbed to death, a 9-year-old girl, and they ascribed it to hooliganism, even though they clearly say that somebody screamed Russia for Russians and then stabbed her.
Right.
A few months ago, there was an exhibition of called I think it was Caution Religion, and it was this kind of thing where they had life-size oklads, the things that sit over icons, the metal part of the icon.
Yeah.
You could walk in and put your face in the icon and your hand in it so you could be the icon.
Cool.
And they had Christ crucified on a Coca-Cola,
interesting.
Thing, a swastika, and the red star. In other words, it was a... Here in America, this would not be at all... However, a group of people from who were ultra-religious Russian Orthodox just came into the exhibition and vandalized parts.
Ah, right. Okay.
And charges were brought up against them. The charges were dismissed, in fact.
Really?
They felt there was no basis for the charges against them, even though they desecrated a public exhibition.
Even it's just a vandalism charge, let alone Gidenko, a racism.
Gidenko testified against them in that also. He has testified against a number of skinhead organizations. Now, there is a large skinhead population. They estimate there to be 50,000 skinheads in Russia. I believe the number might be a little exaggerated, but in any case, they're saying there's 1,500 in each of Moscow and St. Petersburg.
Right.
So there are a lot of skinheads, they're saying, in Russia. And
Have they been this violent? Have they?
Well, they've never been this brazen to the point where they've killed...
They knocked on the door. He opened the door, and they shot him in the shoulder.
Shot him through the door with intent to kill. And there was some... You know, I haven't gotten a lot of information from Russia because everybody there is literally in too much shock to be able to even write about it at this point. I received an email from Sevil Chernitsov on very early Monday morning saying, I have to give you the terrible news that Kolya Gidenko was shot and killed at his flat, in his flat,
yeah,
by fascists. And it was exactly like the story. He was asked for by name. Someone, it seems that someone came to the door and asked for him by name. He was shot through the door and killed. And he was going to testify, it seems, against a neo-Nazi group known as Schulz or Schulze 88.
Right.
And
people living in this country, you sort of know, I've read about this in chat rooms, like AOL things. If you mm-hmm. see people with the screen names and like an 88 or a chat room 88, it's probably going to be a skinhead neo-Nazi.
Yeah, the 88 is a racist
thingy.
To somebody who doesn't know about the reason why, that 88, if you go A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H.
Yeah.
The eighth letter of the alphabet is H, and H is for Heil Hitler. 88 Heil Hitler.
Oh, okay.
It's a code, it's a little code between themselves.
Yeah, right.
Write 88.
And not
HH, so it doesn't come off as this kind of thing like this.
Well, anything that you learn specifically from Gidenko about either, well, sociology or more specifically about life or the way that he conducted himself?
The man was always a gentleman. He was a dear, dear friend. If it were not, very realistically, if it were not for him, I probably would not have gone to Russia. I probably would not have met my wife.
Wow.
My entire life would be different right now, much for the worse. It was an honor and a pleasure to know him. By the way, a group has come forward and claimed responsibility.
Oh, this is okay.
Yeah, they have their pictures and their name posted on the internet.
So, is it that Schulze 88 group?
No,
or different?
No. It may, they may have just
It's Al-Qaeda.
Might just be some group that's coming forward to claim responsibility, even though they had nothing to do with it. Trying to get press out of it. No one knows yet. The city government was still trying to say this could be a random act of hooliganism, which is absolutely idiotic. That someone asks someone by name and then kills them and says it's
Well, what I hope is, you'll keep me posted, and as new details or they come out in the press, over the weeks I'm on the air, I'll add to the story and let people know just what are the details of the death of Nikolai Garenko. But I want to thank you very much for sharing your memories of him and your background on the story, and I want to wish you well with your wife and your lovely daughter. All I can say is thank you again. For coming on the show, Scott Rodowitz.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, and we'll be right back.